Welcome to the Mark Steiner Show. Here are the real news. I'm Mark Steiner, and it's great to have you with us once again. Now, we all know we've just ended this 20-year war on the ground in Afghanistan. But that's not the whole story, by a long shot. In the last 20 years since 9/11, we, the United States that is, spent $21 trillion on military investments on these wars. Not just that, on new equipment and technology like drones, on civilian contractors doing the dirty work, on what we call fighting terrorists at home and abroad. And the Department of Homeland Security, created out of 9/11, is out of control. And most of the FBI's budget doesn't go to fighting crime, corporate corruption, or fighting for civil rights, but to fight counterterrorism and for border security. Imagine what $21 trillion could do to rebuild America if we invested that in our people, our infrastructure, our education systems, healthcare. Well, Lindsay Kashgarian, who heads the National Priorities Project with the Institute for Policy Studies, has done just that. She analyzes how we spent that money, what it means for our future, our freedom, and how it could be done differently in a study called The State of Insecurity, The Cost of Militarization Since 9/11. Here's my conversation with Lindsay Kashgarian. So welcome, Lindsay. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark. Good to be here.
I was reading your vitae again this morning. It always kind of shocks me about how many things you've done and how many places you've been. But let's talk about this report, The State of Insecurity, The Cost of Militarization Since 9/11, that you did with Ashiq Sadiq and Laura Steichen. What really struck me here is not just the $21 trillion was spent, but the tentacles of that and how it, and that's what you're trying to do here is kind of wrap around what the $21 trillion meant, because it's more than just an amount of money being spent. It's what it has engendered because of that spending, right?
That's right, Mark. We wanted to look at two things with this report that went a little deeper. For one thing, we wanted to look not just at the cost of the wars that we've started in Afghanistan and Iraq, but we wanted to look at the cost of how we've militarized here at home. Things from ranging from our immigration system to the FBI and the increased powers that the FBI has had for the past 20 years, and all of these things that kind of grew out of the war on terror, or that the war on terror really fed into over the last 20 years. So that was one part of it. And then we also wanted to look at, you know, what has that money actually done? How has it changed our world? How has it changed our communities? How has it changed our law enforcement, our policing, our immigration system? All of these things, a lot of which have, you know, really been hot button issues over the last few years.
And you went in the way you described this, and we'll get into the heart of it in just a second here, but you also kind of, which I found interesting, weaved a narrative that tied in this explosion of white supremacy, this explosion of authoritarianism in our own country, that you link between 9/11, 2001, and January 6, 21, and leaving Afghanistan. To you, in this report, it's not just about dollars and cents. It's also all connected.
Yes, that's very much the case. It is all connected. If you think about, you know, our evolution from 9/11, and a lot of people don't remember that in the early years after 9/11, the Department of Justice actually had what was effectively a Muslim ban on immigration. Everybody remembers the Trump Muslim ban, but not everybody remembers the Bush Muslim ban. And so it traces all the way back to that. And some of these themes have, you know, really had their roots in the response to 9/11. And then, you know, we see growing animosity to immigrants, we see growing xenophobia, we see growing authoritarianism, we see growing militarism and growing belief that law enforcement and crackdowns and violent oppression are the way to maintain order in this country and in other countries around the world. And all of that really can be drawn back to the U.S. response to 9/11 and the things that we did in the name of security for ourselves that in the end did anything but keep us secure and have made the entire world a less secure place.
And the way you do it, and then we'll get into some specifics here, it's the $21 trillion that was spent over the last 20 years, you see as entwined within that and enabled that.
Absolutely, yes. The spending has made all of it possible. You know, I mentioned the first Muslim ban was enforced by the Bush Department of Justice. The second was the Trump Department of Justice. Most people don't think of the Department of Justice as an arm of the war on terror, but it very much has been. And so we looked at that, and we've looked at, you know, of course, the Department of Homeland Security, which is a huge arm of both the war on terror and the militarization of our society in general. You know, think of the militarization of the southern border. Some people have heard, at least, that we have troops that we've sent to the southern border, military troops that are inside the country at our southern border. People may not have heard that we're using drones, predator drones, military drones to patrol the southern border. So there's a lot of militarization that's going on around all of these things, and it's been funded by the Pentagon, the Department of Homeland Security, and in large part the Department of Justice, which has where the FBI is and the DEA, the Drug Enforcement Agency, and all of these agencies that have actually taken an active role in the war on terror. And one of the Justice Department's core missions is counterterrorism. But what that has amounted to is that, you know, the FBI has gained powers to not just surveil people. And we all know that, you know, they may be listening into our phone calls or at least have access to our phone records, but they've been able to engage in racial profiling with no real limits on their power. The FBI has surveilled and harassed entire communities just based on their race or ethnicity or their religious background, not just Muslim communities, although certainly they've done that, but also Chinese American communities and Black African American communities, looking for crime, but where they have no evidence of a specific crime or wrongdoing, and they're targeting entire communities just based on race and ethnicity. And all of that has grown out of the response to 9/11, and all of it has been enabled by the spending that we have done, this $21 trillion over the course of the last 20 years.
So let's just for a moment, before we jump into the FBI and jump into the other pieces of this, detentions at the border and more, let's talk for a moment about the $21 trillion and how you parsed that out and how you came up with that number. And from reading the report, there's like $16 trillion that went to the military, a huge number of that trillion, almost half went to contractors. But to talk a bit about the $21 trillion for a moment and how that was spent,
right,
and what that meant.
That's right, Mark. So of the $21 trillion we've spent on what we call militarization over the last 20 years, it's the Pentagon, it's our wars, but it's not just our wars, it's the 750 military installations that we keep around the world all the time, with over 200,000 troops stationed permanently overseas. It's those things. It's the war in Afghanistan. It's the war in Iraq. It's the way that the war on terror has spilled over into 85 other countries total besides Afghanistan and Iraq. And we know what some of those will be familiar: Syria, Yemen, Pakistan. But it's in 85 countries where we have drone strikes, or we're doing training of troops, or we're doing other counterterrorism missions, including combat missions. So the war on terror is huge. So all of that Pentagon spending, both for the war on terror and all of the other military missions we have going at any given time, that accounts for about $16 trillion. We also include the cost of caring for veterans, because we don't have to have these veterans programs. They're very necessary, but they're only necessary because we send our troops on these endless deployments. So we include that. That's about $3 trillion. Then we include the cost of homeland security over the last 20 years. That's about $950 billion. And the cost of federal law enforcement, things like the FBI and the DEA, the U.S. Marshals. All of these agencies are very engaged in counterterrorism. They're very engaged in oppression tactics and racial profiling and mass incarceration and things that are really damaging to communities, especially communities of color in the United States. And they're also engaged in operations overseas. Not everybody realizes the FBI, the DEA, the U.S. Marshals, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, they all have offices outside of the United States. So it's a really big system, and that's that last law enforcement part is about $730 billion. All of that put together gets you to $21 trillion over the last 20 years. And we have some, you know, we talk a lot in the report about what else we could have done with that money, because $21 trillion is a number that most of us can't really wrap our heads around, right? We don't deal with trillions of dollars.
Right.
You know, we're lucky, like most of us are okay with thousands, maybe a few of us, you know, can kind of get into millions, but beyond that, we get a little lost, right? So we look at, you know, some of what that's cost. And so, you know, for example, the CDC budget on an annual basis was only about $12 billion. And it went up to about $16 billion during the pandemic. And that's billion, not trillion. So it's huge. It's a huge dollar amount. And all of that money that has gone towards these militarized purposes is money that we haven't put into anything here at home, right? We're talking about right now an infrastructure package or a, you know, the package of Biden's Build Back Better package that would total $3.5 trillion over 10 years. That is less than a quarter of this. And it's only for 10 years. And what we're hearing, you know, oh, we can't afford that. That's too expensive. But we've spent $21 trillion on militarization over the last 20 years. So we have the money to invest when we want to, when that's what our politicians want to do. It's the money is there and they have the ability to do it.
Well, I really want to get to that really quickly here because one of the most important parts of the report to me was the end of it, which is how we can spend the money differently, which I want to get to in a moment. But one of the things that strikes me here on the way there, the numbers are incredible. I mean, $949 billion to Homeland Security, almost $1 trillion for Homeland Security, and $732 billion for federal law enforcement. Those are huge numbers. And so, but let's talk a minute about, let's break one of those things out. Let's talk about the Department of Justice and how that links into the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq and the money that goes to DOJ and how that money is spent at DOJ. You know, we think of the Department of Justice, a lot of liberals and other people want to think about it as a place for the Civil Rights Division to fight for civil rights in America. And that's what the DOJ is there for, you know, crusading for our rights. But that's what it's really doing when you rate about 88% of the budget of their budget going to counterterrorism, border security, things like that. So let's get real about what we're spending this money on.
Absolutely, Mark. So we wanted to look at this, and yes, people do think the Department of Justice, and we all have warm, fuzzy feelings about, you know, maybe about the 1960s Department of Justice.
Right.
Or
it's
about,
all about Thurgood Marshall and fighting ahead.
Right.
Yes,
that's right. But that is not, there is still the Civil Rights Division in the Department of Justice, but the budget of the Civil Rights Division is about $150 million a year. And yeah, so not millions, billions, trillions, each one of those is 1,000 times the next one, right? So you have $150 million for the Civil Rights Division, and then, you know, billions for the FBI, which is out there doing racial profiling, and half of the FBI budget over the last 20 years has been considered defense related. And a lot of that is stuff they're not even doing in the United States, right? It's stuff they're doing overseas. So the money in the Justice Department is not really going to the things that we like to think about and have good feelings about, like the Civil Rights Division or the Antitrust Division. The money is going to the law enforcement agencies. And, you know, this is, let's remember, the Justice Department is not, it's part of, we talk about criminal justice, right? And we don't think that our criminal justice system is really about justice. Our Department of Justice isn't really about justice either. It's our system of, it's our prosecutorial system. It's our incarceration system. The Federal Bureau of Prisons is part of the Department of Justice. It's the FBI, which, as I mentioned, and you know, has done tremendous amounts of racial profiling and harassment of Muslim communities in particular, but other communities as well. It's, you know, the arrests that the Department of Justice, the federal arrests by the Department of Justice, more than half of them in recent years were for immigration offenses. Less than 2% of the arrests were for violent offenses. So this is something that is, you know, it's a system that is really deeply engaged in the oppression of immigrants, the oppression of communities of color. It is, you know, it is a system that feeds into police training, where you have the FBI training police in firearms and military tactics. You have the DEA, which is engaged in, you know, violent law enforcement overseas. One of the things we cite in the report is an instance where DEA agents in Honduras were involved in a firefight where civilians were killed, including two pregnant women. So these are tremendously violent agencies. And this is what the Justice Department really does. And as you mentioned, one of the things we cite in the report is that 88% of the Justice Department budget is for counterterrorism, what they call violent crime, although as I noted, less than 2% of their arrests are actually for violent crimes, and counter-narcotics. So, you know, part of the story that we tell in the report is also that the war on drugs is very much alive, and it is very much a source of violence, and it's very much a source of oppression for Black and brown people in this country and in other countries.
So let's connect the money in the dots here with something that struck me in the report about the DOJ before we talk about another piece of this, which is that, to me, there's this direct line between Bush and the Patriot Act and the Protect America Act that they did after 9/11, which was really a threat to our civil liberties. Then you look at the aftermath of January the 6th.
Yes.
And there is a real, there's a direct link here. And you can talk about the money aspect, but also the other, the political aspect of this, because, you know, we look, I've spent a better part of my long life so far fighting the right wing and racists in this country and being part of that, those movements. But I also saw what happened after January the 6th. I dislike these people intensely. They have to be stopped. But what's being set up here is yes. part of what you're writing about, which is dangerous to all of us.
That's right. Part of what we talk about is, you know, the January 6th event is significant in this because it both comes out of a lot of the, you know, the anti-immigrant, the racism, the xenophobia. It grows out of all of those things, right? And those are things that we fed with this spending, very much so. You know, we fed Islamophobia, we fed racism, we fed xenophobia, we fed fear of immigrants. All of that is what we fed into with this spending over 20 years. And then on January 6th, it comes to a head with people deciding they're going to storm the Capitol and take over the Capitol building, driven by these same motivations. But then what happens after that is we send in the National Guard, and we still have a very securitized Capitol building. You can't just go into up to the Capitol building. And the Justice Department is now looking at new counterterror powers. So 20 years on, instead of learning the lesson that we went too far and we in taking away civil liberties and, you know, and we've been surveilling people too much and we've taken away too many of the civil liberties, today the Justice Department is actually looking at what additional powers they think they may need in order to address what happened on January 6th and to start to really seriously look at, you know, white supremacist terrorism, which is a real thing and which we absolutely need a government response to. But the government response we need isn't to further empower the Department of Justice in their surveillance and other ways of ignoring our civil liberties and targeting communities. So it's really sinister. And the Department of Justice, sort of, the more power they get, the more they want to kind of keep going farther. This has been working for them so far, and they aren't willing to let it go.
And you make the connection both in terms of budgets and in terms of real policy about this war, this $21 trillion spent over the last 20 years also has been the underpinning of the militarization of local policing.
It absolutely has. Yes, it is completely fed into the militarization of local policing. People probably over the last few years have seen things like armored tanks and police using military riot gear and other military gear in response to protests. That's one of the places where we've seen it the most. We've seen it at Black Lives Matter protests and uprisings. We've seen it at protests of fossil fuel pipelines like Line 3, where law enforcement, federal law enforcement and local law enforcement are bringing out this military equipment. A lot of that equipment comes at no cost from the Department of Defense to local or federal law enforcement agencies. And what we found is that over the last 20 years, $1.8 billion of military equipment has gone from the Department of Defense to local law enforcement agencies. But it's especially alarming because there was a huge spike in the flow of that military equipment. You know, things like their rifles and armored tanks and helicopters and drones and all kinds of things. But there was a huge spike in that equipment flowing to local law enforcement right around 2013 or 2014, right after the U.S. was withdrawing the surges from Iraq and Afghanistan, and a lot of equipment was coming back from those war zones. And we see that equipment turning around and the Department of Defense doesn't want it. It costs them money to maintain it. It costs them money to house it. So they push it off onto local law enforcement. And we can see that happening in the data in those, right in those years of 2013 and 2014, where a bunch of stuff is coming back from war zones. And you can see it going right into local law enforcement agencies. And then we see it out on the streets in response to protest. And the other place where we cited a lot of ACLU research that they've done into how much more common SWAT teams have become and how much local law enforcement relies on SWAT teams for drug enforcement. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that results in what happened to Breonna Taylor, right? Where somebody bangs down her door and they're not that concerned about who's on the other side of that door. And they have all of this military equipment. They're all prepared for a fight and they go in and somebody gets killed. So it's directly connected.
And it's connected with a couple of quick things here. The Homeland Security piece you wrote about, ICE and border protection, the border wall, how that all feeds into this. And before we jump into that, one thing I that really hit me was that in the report, and you talk about the Department of Justice again, how they refuse to say how many people U.S. Marshals have killed or shot.
They won't release
that data.
They are less accountable than our local police are.
And they're the ones trying to hold the local police accountable, but they won't hold themselves accountable.
The Department of Justice says it's going to hold the local police accountable at the same time that they will not release information on how many people they've killed or incidents where U.S. Marshals have used their weapons, which we know U.S. Marshals are more likely to use their service weapons than local law enforcement officers. So it's a tremendously violent force, and they really have no accountability at all.
There's a really kind of a dangerous synergy here, this tying together the money spent on the war and the money spent on Homeland Security and the money spent on putting immigrants into prison and deporting them and the rise of mass incarceration. These things are really interrelated, both financially and in terms of policy.
That's right. That is the bottom line of our report, is that, you know, we put all this money into this approach to, you know, this approach to law enforcement, this approach to threats from around the world, this approach to honestly, to people here in this country and people in other countries elsewhere saying things we don't like. And we've put all of this firepower behind this. And that has both resulted in tremendous damage. I mean, one of the things that we talk about in the report is that there, you know, the Cost of War Project at Brown University found there have been 900,000 people killed in the war on terror. We know that there have been 5 million people deported in this country over the last 20 years, and that annual deportations have doubled from what they were 20 years ago. And we know that, you know, mass incarceration has actually kind of leveled off, but it's not gone away by any means, and that we haven't done anything to really address it. And that exploded 20 years ago. And so all of this is still going. There's all of this human cost to this $21 trillion. And then there's the human cost of what we haven't invested in, right? The things that we've neglected.
Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's talk about the things that you write about here, just towards the end of the report, where you talk about where the money could have been spent to change the nature of, to strengthen our own society in the midst of the crisis people are facing.
Right. And one of the reasons we point this out, right, is because we're so used to being told over and over again that we just can't afford to do the things we need to do, right? We can't afford solutions to climate change. We can't afford healthcare. We can't afford this. We can't afford anything. But that's completely not true. And one of the things we wanted to do by showing just how much money we've spent on militarization is to show that we have the resources and we have the political will when politicians are in agreement about something like this. There's been tremendous bipartisan coordination and cooperation on this issue, right? We've all, you know, everybody thinks that there's no bipartisanship in the United States, but there's bipartisanship when it comes to militarization. but we're so used to hearing we can't afford all this other stuff, right? So one of the things we did was we looked at, well, what could we do with trillions of dollars? And, you know, one of the things that sticks out to me the most right now with all the extreme weather events and, you know, wildfires and flooding, and just doesn't seem like it ever stops anymore, is that the cost of building a completely renewable electric grid for the United States, completely rebuilding our electric grid for the whole country on renewable sources, would be $4.5 trillion. That is less than a quarter of what we've spent on militarization over the last 20 years. It's less than we've given to military contractors. We've given military contractors $7 trillion over the last 20 years. For less than what we've given to military contractors, we could have built out a fully renewable electric grid. It would be a huge part of the solution to climate change, and it's something that we desperately need to do. And one of the other things we wanted to do with this report is say, 20 years from now, what do we need to have done? You know, looking back in 20 years, what will we say we were able to do or weren't able to do with trillions of dollars over the next 20 years? Another example, you know, we have a bunch of people who are at risk of eviction now because we have eviction moratoriums that are ending and people are behind on rent. There are millions of people who may become homeless in the coming weeks and months. And we have a Fight for 15 that has had tremendous success in moving that idea forward and winning a $15 wage in some places, but we don't have a national minimum wage that's livable. And another thing we found is that for just $2.3 trillion, just over 10% of what we've spent, we could create 5 million $15 an hour jobs with benefits that would last 10 years. So there is a tremendous amount that we could do with this money that would actually save lives and actually keep people in this country safe. And we're at a point now where we're at the end of the war in Afghanistan. We've pulled our troops out. The Biden administration says they want to move towards diplomacy, not military solutions on things. And if we can't pull that money out of the Pentagon now and reinvest, we're going to be in deep trouble 20 years from now.
And when you wrote that just $200 billion would allow every 3 or 4 year old child for 10 years to be in preschool for free.
That's right.
And raise teacher salaries. And you think about the amount of money being spent on these wars and that how small amount that is in comparison to take care of our children.
It is absolutely a small amount in comparison. It is, yes. It's less than half, you know, and that's for 10, that's to do it for 10 years, right? $200 billion to do it for 10 years. That's less than half of what we gave to military contractors last year.
And so when you talk about that $4.5 trillion to decarbonize the grid, what period of time are you looking at when you say that? Is that a 20-year time period?
Well, I mean, that's a one-time cost, right? You to rebuild the power grid, and then there would be some maintenance costs in addition to that. But the cost to actually, you know, sort of build out the infrastructure, I think it's probably a 10-year period. But it's obviously it's not something you can do all in 1 year.
Right. You think about the not just the environment and the health of the country that way and ending fossil fuels, but I think about the thousands and thousands and thousands of people that could have high paying jobs putting that grid together.
Absolutely. Yes.
Instead of putting drones together.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. We know many of these things would create jobs, right? Childcare creates jobs. And part of the, you know, $200 billion to give childcare to 3 and 4 year olds. That's not just childcare for 3 and 4 year olds. That's jobs too, right? And part of that proposal actually builds in that those are good paying jobs. So almost all of the things that we talk about, you know, childcare and elder care and higher education, all of these things are job creators. And we actually know from other research that all of them are better job creators dollar for dollar than investing in the military.
So I guess the next step here is get this report and these ideas in front of the people of America and in front of the politicians and make them deal with it.
Yes, well, we have some friendly politicians who have this report in their hands. We probably need a few more of them, but your listeners are familiar with that idea. I do want to say, you know, one of the things that thinking about the last 20 years and the 9/11 anniversary is that, you know, thinking back 20 years ago when there was one lonely vote in Congress against the war in Afghanistan, that was Representative Barbara Lee, of course. She's still there, right. But she's not right. The only vote anymore, right? She's not the only progressive voice on foreign policy in Congress anymore. She's got good folks with her. She's got Representative Mark Pocan and Ro Khanna and Cory Bush and, Ayanna Pressley and a bunch of people now in the new Congress are really with her on this. And it's not enough yet, but there's been some real progress on progressive foreign policy over the last few years.
So before we let you go, Lindsay, how can folks access or support?
Well, you can see the report at our website, nationalpriorities.org.
All right. And we'll put that up too, as we put this up, and I'll say that again before we leave everybody today. And again, Lindsay Kashgarian, thanks so much for the work you do. You put a huge amount of work, all of you did in this report. It means a lot. It's a place to start the argument that we need to have and discussion we have in this country. So thank you again for your work, and thanks for joining us today.
Thanks so much, Mark.
I hope you enjoyed that conversation today with Lindsay Kashgarian, and check out her report, The State of Insecurity. It's well worth the read. And please support us in our effort to bring voices of journalists and activists like Lindsay Kashgarian to the airwaves. All you have to do is go to www.therealnews.com/support. Become a monthly donor and become part of the future with us. So thank you all for joining us today. Please let me know what you think and what you'd like us to cover. Just write to me at mss@therealnews.com, and I'll write you right back. So for Stephen Frank and the crew here at The Real News, I'm Mark Steiner. Stay involved, keep listening, and take care.